You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Ooh, it's time to probe the universe on Spaced Out, thanks to the spunky spunks at Stardome Observatory and Planetarium in One Tree Hill.
Spaced Out.
And I'm joined by David from the Stardome Observatory. Hello, David.
Hi, Alice.
How are you going this morning?
Oh, pretty good. A bit of rain last night, but it seems to be clearing up.
Yeah, from what I can see from the studio, it looks like it's coming into a nice day.
Yeah, it's just a matter of keeping it that way until I get my washing done.
Sometimes the weather is as changeable as the weather. Sorry, yes. Bad joke. So, you've sent me some topics. I have to say I'm very intrigued by this first one, a solar system.
Yes, because we only talk every 2 weeks, it's a real frustration when announcements happen just after one of our talks, you know. And that's what happened in this case. The week following our last talk, NASA had given a heads up that they're going to make a big announcement.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about 7 planets that had been found around a star. And they're basically all found very close at the same time. There was in science terms, when we're looking for planets, there's usually many, many years, but these were found pretty close to each other. The thing about this is not just that it's 7 planets, because we have found many other solar systems. There are hundreds of them amongst the more than 3,000 planets around other stars that have been discovered to date. What makes this one rather special is firstly the star that they go around, and the other is the size of these planets. Most of the planets that people have found and what they're looking for are around stars like our sun. So what we're really looking for is another Earth. We're looking for a Goldilocks planet. So we know there's life on our Earth, so the idea is look for planets around suns like stars like our sun, and then look for planets that mimic or look like the Earth, and then go from there. But in this case, the star is very, very small. In fact, it's just above the limit that it can be a star. To make a star, you need something in the order of 80 Jupiters all in one place. Jupiter is 318 times the mass of the Earth, so you're talking about something that's pretty sizable compared with a planet. But this star is just at the limit of becoming a star.
What do you call it if it's too small? Like what's
a brown dwarf?
Oh, okay.
So anything between about 13 to 20 Jupiter masses up to 80 is called a brown dwarf. It's large, and it's not really a planet, but it's not got enough material to create enough gravity at the center that the temperature will cause nuclear reactions to occur.
Okay.
So this star's not very big, and it's not very bright. The temperature is less than half the temperature of the surface of our sun. So it's actually cooler than the sunspots that are on our sun. So it's small and it's cool, and these planets are very, very close to the star. Mercury is the closest planet to our sun. All 7 of these planets are 6 times closer.
Wow. So does that kind of make up for it being a cooler sun?
Exactly.
The fact that they're closer.
And it brings in a whole bunch of other factors. Now, the equation sort of changed, really. When you're looking for a habitable planet, it's got to be the distance for liquid water to be present on the surface, which is what our Earth is. So a cooler star, the planet is going to be closer. A hotter star is going to be further away. Not too hot, though, because that star will explode, and that's not a good thing. So with all of these planets, they're closer than Mercury, but 3 of them at least seem to be in the habitable zone for this type of star. One of the other differences that is most likely, which needs to be confirmed, and there'll be lots of observations that'll be following up with us with all sorts of telescopes, is whether these planets are locked gravitationally. If you think of our moon, we only see one face of our moon.
Yep.
As it goes around the Earth's gravity keeps one side towards us the whole time. We never see the far side of the moon. And it's thought that a planet like this, very close to a star like this, would also be tidally locked, which means you'd have a very, very hot side of the planet and a freezing side of the planet, which changes climate and so on and the possibilities of life. So there's lots of interesting things with this, and really is opening up a slightly different angle to finding another Goldilocks planet that maybe it won't be as big as the Earth. It might be smaller, but around a smaller and cooler star.
Interesting. Very interesting. Yeah, I do remember when this was announced, and I was like, oh no, bad timing for Spaced Out. But I also remember that Google did a very adorable Google Doodle. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah.
Of the search engine. But yeah, very interesting. It's a big announcement. Is that because we haven't found many planets that are as likely to be Goldilocks planets before?
Yeah, that's certainly part of it. I mean, the size of these planets are Earth-like. They're between about half the mass of the Earth to a bit over a third larger than the Earth. When we talk about mass, then that's how heavy it is, and that's what creates gravity. And the gravity is needed to hold the atmosphere on the surface of that planet. It is a big leap. I mean, when the pre-announcement came, people were thinking, oh, they've discovered alien signals or something like that.
Yeah.
So it wasn't quite as big as perhaps people were expecting, but it's still a pretty big discovery.
Awesome. And so what comes next? Like, will they try and send something there? Or?
Oh, no, I'm afraid not. It's 10 times further away than the nearest star.
So a wee way off being able to get something out there.
Yeah, I'm afraid. It's nearly 40 light years. So even the light coming from the system takes 40 years to reach us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
They'll be following up with other observations, as I said, and I mean, not just in the next few months, but in the next years. There's the James Webb Space Telescope's going up past the moon, and I think it's next year. That's a multi-billion dollar telescope that people have been working on for about a decade. I mean, instruments like that will be looking at systems like this as well.
So we'll just be able to get yet more information as technology progresses.
Try and identify the atmospheres of these planets, try and work out if they're rotating or not, find out what the composition of the atmosphere. I mean, one of the things about a dim star is it's easier to get a good look at the planets because the star isn't so bright. The glare doesn't interfere quite so much. I mean, half the problem with trying to image or get a good look at planets is that the stars are too bright and the planets are close. So that is one advantage of a small star. But the other is they are dimmer and therefore the light's not so much light to look at.
Cool. Okay, let's move on to some SpaceX news.
SpaceX, that's Elon Musk's company. A couple of things. Firstly, they christened Launch Complex 39A. Now, at the Space Launch Facility in Florida, 39A is the pad that the Apollo astronauts left from, including Apollo 11, going to the moon. And then the space shuttle used it up until 2011. That sat unused since 2011. What SpaceX had done is to refurbish that, and it's now the launch pad they're using. So that was christened a week or so ago when they sent a rocket up with supplies for the space station. And not long after that, Elon Musk then says, oh, by the way, we're going to send a couple of people to the moon next year.
Cool.
It turns out that these passengers are basically paying. They're paying a big sum for their ticket. Their names haven't been released, and the price they paid also has not been released. All he said is that it's nobody from Hollywood.
If you, Dave, if you were the kind of person that had just too much money, I mean, I don't know your financial situation, but you're just to the point where you just had, almost limitless amounts of money. Is this something that you would spend your money on?
I mean, I'm tempted to say that I'm one of those two people, but I'm afraid I'll be lying. I'd leap at the opportunity, yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, I think I would too, but I don't know, maybe I would wait until a couple of other people had done it first.
I think you have that advantage. I'd rather get it done before they say, oh, you're too decrepit to go up.
Yeah, I want to just get up there.
Yeah, so we'll see what really happens. I mean, they're not going to land on the moon. They're going to go skimming past the moon, so fairly close to it, and have a good look at it. Then they're going to go out another 60 to 100 K or so. Did I say 100? I meant 100,000 K, sorry.
Okay, yeah, I was thinking in my head. Doesn't seem like that much.
Yeah, 60,000 to 100,000 kilometres further out, and then loop around back to the Earth. So we'll see if that comes about. But, I mean, Elon Musk, he's an achiever, that's for sure.
How long does that kind of trip take? Like, how long will they be off
planet?
Well,
the Apollo astronauts took nearly 3 days, but then what they needed to do was slow down at the moon so they could go around into orbit and then from orbit around the moon go down to land. So it took a little longer because they didn't want to arrive at the moon really quickly. This one, I imagine they'll be arriving more quickly because they're going to go past the moon. So getting to the moon is probably going to be, 3 days or something in that order, and something similar coming back.
Cool.
So about a week's holiday.
Yeah, pop away for a week. Awesome. Looking forward to hearing more about that when it comes about. Okay, moving on to the Juno mission.
This is the spacecraft that's orbiting Jupiter. It's making these big orbits, then zooming in close to the clouds. There's a problem with a couple of valves on board that aren't operating quite as they expected. So where they were going to go from the current orbit to a very low orbit, that part has now been canned, so they're going to stay in this higher orbit. They're saying that it won't affect the science that Juno's capable of completing, but you have to think, well, come on, if you can't get down very low, then it might do, but they seem pretty confident. So, yeah, just one change there that that mission is not quite what it was.
That's must be disappointing.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. Night sky, let me just go into that quickly. It's a bit disappointing as well because there's only one planet after sunset in the west, that's Mars, which is pretty low down, and over the next couple of weeks it's going to get even lower as it moves slowly back towards the sun. So we're sort of becoming planetless for a little while down the track after sunset. We've still got Orion and so on in the west, northwest, and Matariki low down in the northwest. But in the morning sky, it's not so bad. There's Jupiter high in the sky in the north, and Saturn in the northeast. So with Scorpio, it makes for quite a nice sky in the morning. What we've got coming up in a couple of weeks is a celebration, the last 2 weeks of this month, of Stardome being around for 50 years. Stardome as Auckland Observatory was opened in 1967. And I'll talk more about the actual celebrations and so on at Stardome next time. But next weekend, what will be happening is something called 50 Hours of Astronomy. So the 50 Hours of Astronomy is being run by the Auckland Astronomical Society, and they're going to have a bit like sort of a pop-up sidewalk telescopes.
Awesome.
So it's all around the city. There's about four or five different spots. They'll be out with telescopes, and that's this coming next weekend, so Friday, Saturday, Sunday, out showing people the moon and the stars. There's interesting things to see out there for free, so there's no charge for any part of that.
If you want to know,
keep an eye out for where they might be.
Yeah, are they going to advertise where they will be, or is it kind of you get surprised?
No, it won't be. No, it's not quite pop-up surprise. I'm not quite sure of how they're advertising it, I must confess.
Okay.
I couldn't find that out before going on air. I mean, Stardome should have some information next week about that, I would think. So that would probably be your best bet. I mean, if people want to become involved, they can contact a guy called Niven Brown at events@astronomy.org.nz. That's the email address. And there's also his cell phone is 021-935-261. So some information might be obtained from them.
Okay,
so this
cool.
sort of works in with the 50th anniversary at Stardome, which is to say it'll be the last 2 weeks of this month.
So maybe just keep an eye on the Stardome webpage also for the next few days.
And also the Astronomical Society webpage, which is astronomy.org.nz.
Cool.
Yeah.
That sounds like a really cool event.
Yeah, yeah. So fingers crossed that Auckland's clouds cooperate. I mean, in 2009, we had 100 hours of astronomy. That was part of the International Year of Astronomy. And in that 100 hours, there was something like 4 hours of cloud. It was just absolutely amazing.
Yeah, that's so good.
So fingers crossed we do it again this time.
Great. Okay, yep. Well, everyone cross our fingers for a cloudless weekend.
Absolutely. And next weekend, yeah. Tomorrow's Children's Day at Stardome, so $2 per person. Come along 10 till 4 and bring your little aliens with you.
Great. Thank you so much for speaking with us this morning, David.
Thanks, Alice.
I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.